You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is Celebs with Horses, highlighting celebrities from film, TV, the arts, and music, and their love of horses. Hosted by award-winning author, Lisa Wysocki.
Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to Celebs with Horses. Before we start, a quick shout-out and thanks to today's title sponsor, Hands on Gloves. I am your host, Lisa Wysocki. I am so excited to bring this episode to you because we're talking with one of my idols, and hopefully yours, Michelle Akers. If you're not familiar with women's soccer, you might not recognize the name, but Michelle has been aptly described by former USA coach Tony DeCicco as the best woman who has ever played the game. That's some pretty high praise, but as you'll hear, it's well-deserved, especially since during her 15-year international career, Michelle was widely recognized as the world's best player. Michelle was the first ever woman soccer player to gain global fame, and in the year 2000 was named the Fédération Internationale de Football Association, also known as FIFA, Player of the Century. Football, of course, refers to soccer, as the rest of the world calls it. I have to admit, I was not initially a fan of soccer. In fact, I hadn't even heard much about it until I got to college and I dated a guy who had played it in high school. I'm old enough that soccer wasn't a recognized sport in any high school in Minnesota at the time, at least that I knew of. But a lot has changed since those days. By the late 1980s, just about everyone in the country had heard of Michelle Akers. She was the female sports superstar of the time. I became a fan not just because of soccer, but because she began racking up one first after the other, both on and off the field. Michelle scored the first official goal for the United States women's national soccer team and was the first to sign a shoe endorsement. She was the leading scorer in the inaugural FIFA Women's World Cup with 10 goals in 6 matches. She also set a World Cup record by scoring 5 goals in a 7-0 victory over Taiwan as she led the Americans to their first world championship. Former teammate Mia Hamm said, "She was a warrior. She was our everything." Mia Hamm's words are pretty big, but Michelle has shoes big enough to fill them. In 1996, Michelle helped earn the first ever Olympic gold medal for the United States in women's soccer by defeating China in front of a sold-out stadium of 90,000 fans. This made Michelle Akers an Olympic gold medalist among many, many other awards. In 1998, she received the FIFA Order of Merit, which, by the way, is the highest honor awarded by FIFA for significant contributions to the game around the world. To date, Michelle is the only female to receive this honor, with other honorees including such notable people as former United States Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, men's soccer legend Pele, and the former president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela. In 1999, Michelle graced the cover of a Wheaties box, and I think that was the only box of Wheaties I have ever purchased. Due to injuries, some of which you'll hear about shortly, Michelle retired just before the 2000 Olympics. This was after an historic 15-year career that included 105 goals. She also racked up more than 30 orthopedic surgeries for various injuries. Because of that, Michelle is noted as one of the toughest players in the history of sport. Off the field, Michelle was one of the first female athletes to fight for women's rights and equality in sports. Because of that, she was viewed by some as a troublemaker and by others simply as greedy. She was the first female soccer player to urge the largest soccer brands in the world to invest in the women's game. Umbro is a company that makes soccer apparel. An employee heard her plea, and Michelle became the first woman to sign a soccer endorsement deal. She also took charge of public messaging in labor disputes. She and 8 other players went on strike ahead of the 1996 Olympics while they squabbled with U.S. soccer over bonuses and fair pay. And she sued U.S. soccer multiple times. Michelle Akers was a trailblazer in women's soccer and for women, and that's why I became a fan. She was fierce and tough, dedicated and driven. By now, you might ask why we're talking with the greatest women's soccer player in history. Well, because horses have always been a passion of hers, and because since she retired, she has used the drive and dedication she had in soccer to fight for abused and unwanted horses by founding a nonprofit, the Michelle Akers Horse Rescue and Outreach, where she provides sanctuary and healing to horses and other animals. Let's learn now how she first became interested in horses.
Oh, man, when my first interest was from reading The Black Stallion. As a kid, I read those books over and over and over and over again, and would dream about being Alec, being that kid with that Black Stallion horse. And so that was kind of drove me the rest of my life. And it still does, that picture in my head when I'm spending time with my horses. So that book initially, and then just that innate something that draws me, you know, to all kinds of animals, dogs, cats, pygmy goats, but there's just something special about the horse that is just magnetic and mysterious and majestic and wild that I can't get enough of.
Most of us read many of the same books that Michelle did, but Michelle made the difficult decision to put her dreams of horses on hold for a bit while she pursued another passion, that of soccer.
You know, I was an athletic kid. I loved the outdoors. I played every sport, but I you know, my two loves, my one love was soccer, and I would have played that 7 days a week, you know, 24/7. But my folks were like, Michelle, let's try to balance this out and at least play other sports until you're a junior in high school, and then you can pick. So I had to wait till to be a junior before I could just focus on soccer. And in the meantime of all of that, you know, there was always the dogs and cats in my house who, you know, my cats would go under my bed and have kittens. And, you know, the dog was mine basically. And there was this attraction, but then there was always this dream of horses, but we didn't have any money. So you know, I was duct taping my cleats together to play soccer. So the horses were a far away, you know, dream of one day. And I just took advantage of any friend or anyone I met, and they said they'd have a horse. I was like, can I come ride? Can I see your horse? So that's kind of how I was throughout, you know, my life and through my soccer career.
That's how it was for Michelle until 1996, when Michelle met a triathlete whose sister had horses. That quickly led to Michelle owning a horse for the very first time, but she didn't get to spend as much time with her new equine friend as she wanted.
You know, kind of not real, because I was on the road all the time, traveling for the U.S. national team and playing World Cups and Olympics. And that I had to keep that horse, you know, at somebody else's place. So it wasn't until I retired in 2000 that I actually had horses on my own property.
It turns out that the triathlete's sister lived in Orlando, Florida, and had not one, but two horses, one of which taught Michelle how to ride.
One was Ben, and he was like a Belgian Clydesdale mix, and he had one eye and he was just a plotter, and me and a buddy would just jump on his back and just ride him around the round pin bareback, and we would fall off and then he would just stop. He was like beautifully gentle and patient with us. And then the second horse was Vinny, and he was an Arabian, this white Arabian. And that's the horse. That was my first horse. So that horse, he was the kind where if you're, you know, galloping down, this is rural dirt roads and trails in the woods and stuff. And of course, I like to go fast. So we would be cantering or galloping down. And then, you know, he would just like all of a sudden take a sharp 90 degree left out, right out from under you, like when a mailbox was, you know, when we're passing a mailbox, you'd just go, jip, and you would just be left sitting in midair, you know. And so I learned from that horse how to stay on, especially around mailboxes.
Michelle found the determination to become an Olympic athlete, and she found the motivation to teach herself to ride. So I wondered what drove her to all her achievements. Was it some super secret visualization technique? Meditation? I couldn't wait to find out.
I am one that has the constant picture of where I want to go, where I want to be, who I want to be, how I want to live, like that ultimate picture. And then, so with that as my focus, that's my motivation. As I go through the day, weeks or months, I try to keep the steps leading towards that ultimate goal. And so some of it's really long-term and some of it's, you know, very short-term, like recovering from, I've had 30 surgeries or actually over 30 surgeries just on one knee from soccer. And, recovering from surgeries is that exact process. It's, you know, okay, my knee is a wreck. They just fixed it. And now the picture in my head is, you know, me scoring goals and running down the field or riding horses, and how do I get there? And that's day by day by day. And that's my motivation, was to, you know, not to have my friend boost me up on my horse off my crutches so I could ride. Like, I actually want to get on by myself and be healthy and strong and or play soccer, you know, and kick ass in every capacity with a healthy knee. So that's kind of my strategy in life.
I have to say that with 8 surgeries on my own right knee, Michelle is the only person I've met who has had more knee surgeries than I have. I can't imagine that's a contest anyone wants to win, though. In going to a list of questions from our listeners, many of you were interested in the challenges Michelle had during the transition from soccer to horse rescue. Her answer was far more eloquent and beautiful than I imagined.
Yeah, I retired, and my last tournament was the World Cup in 1999. We won that. We're world champions. But in that tournament, I had a fan grabbed my arm, dislocated my shoulder, and so I retired, having to have 5 shoulder surgeries over those 2 years. What got me through that actually was my horses, because every day I could go out there and be with them. And I had, you know, my shoulder didn't bother me so much when I was around them and taking care of them. So the story, though, of how I got into rescue, I had no intention of doing anything like that. I mean, I was like, woohoo, I'm going to be a cowgirl. I'm going to get, you know, a bunch of property and have my black stallion and have a herd of horses. And, you know, I pictured it someplace in Montana somewhere. And what happened was these neighbor of mine came over and said, there's this horse down the road. It's starved. It's by itself. And apparently it had been abandoned on this piece of property. And I rode my bike down there and was like, oh my gosh. So I called animal control. Okay, thank you. And then, you know, we could go by nothing. And then a week, and then I kept calling and calling, and then realized, oh my gosh, no one's helping this horse, right? So I started researching, like, what happens? Like, what's the process of helping a rescued horse, and what should I do? What do other rescues do? Because I was just focusing on getting this horse saved. One day, it took about 6 months. One day, then my neighbor, she was a little 15-year-old girl. She's like, Michelle, guess what? They're picking up the horse. They're picking up the horse. So we ran, you know, rode our bikes down there, and there's all these police cars and trailer, animal control, and they're picking up this horse, and they were taking it to a property nearby, and those people that took in that horse had like this like barbecue to raise money to take care of that horse. And I was so excited to go, just to erase that picture I have of that horse suffering alone on its own, to being in, you know, a stall, to being fed, to having a good life. Right. So I went, and they had this sign up sheet for, you know, we're just signing up, taking names for people who'd be willing to transport for, animal control, if, you know, when other horses need transport from various locations. So I sure, yes, I'll do it. Well, the next day, animal control called me the next day. And I was like, oh my gosh, it was a cruelty case in Seminole County and near Orlando, Florida. And there was two horses on the property. This guy had tried to bury one of the horses who was sick alive with a, you know, bobcat tractor.
How awful.
Yeah. And so someone interrupted him by calling the police. And so police came, they had to put down the one horse, and then they had this other starved horse there. And so that was the horse they wanted me to pick up and, you know, foster. Right. So, I had never taken care of any animal, like, you know, near death. I mean, she was near death. It was just, she was skin and bone. She had lacerations all over, there was infection on her skin. It was just awful. So I said, I'm not sure I can handle this because I am very like sensitive and all heart. So I thought this would break my heart. I wouldn't be able to help her. Well, I said, let me think about it. So I thought about it, and one of my teammates, Christine Lilly, is one of my favorite players ever. She would always say, look, all you have to do is try. That was her whole motto of her career. All you have to do is try. So I said, okay, all I have to do is try. So I asked a friend, come help me pick up this horse, took the horse to my barn. And I had four other horses there, walked her in, and she was this black horse. She was black, like saddlebred. And she just went, oh, and took the biggest breath and standing in my aisle. And then I was like, oh my gosh, like I melted. And I was so happy to have her there. And I called a couple rescues in Florida to asking for advice and how do I take care of her, and just did everything they said. And I just tried. And it took a year and a lot of, you know, hard stuff, sad stuff, but beautiful stuff as well. And she, you know, recovered, not without, you know, damage to her, but she recovered to be a sassy, you know, she was sassy with an opinion. She was beautiful. I rescued two pygmy goats to be her little herd, and she shared a fence with my other guys. But in that process of, you know, helping her recover, I realized she was changing me. She was healing me.
I was so riveted by this story, and there is so much more to tell, and we'll get to it very soon. But first, a word from our title sponsor. I wanted to let you know about my new favorite grooming tool, hands-on gloves. With the gloves, you can actually feel the horse as you groom. Really, it's just an amazing experience that, in addition to grooming, helps me connect with my horses. Whether it's itchy bug bites, sticky sweat marks, caked on mud, or exuberant springtime shedding, hands-on gloves gives you the hands-on tools you need to get the job done right. Just put them on and start grooming your horse. It's that easy, and your horse will love it. Hands-on gloves comes in pairs, so you'll get twice the work done in half the time. And since they come in three different sizes, you get the gloves that work the best for you. Plus, they come in a variety of very cool colors. So do yourself and your horse a favor and check them out today. Hands-on gloves are available at major retailers nationwide or at handsongloves.com. And now, let's get back to Michelle and her story, which continues as she tells us how she overcame her anger at the idea of animal cruelty and how she found a true connection with the horses and other animals she rescued.
You know what? I'm connected to the whole soccer world. Maybe I can get the soccer community to rally around animal rescue and these horses. And so that's, I bought a book and I literally read how to start a nonprofit. And that's how I started. So it wasn't easy to have her or other, you know, horses or animals in my care that have been so abused. And I found it hard to not get stuck on the abuser and the tragedy and unnecessariness of it, of what has happened. But ultimately, I sort of learned that, look, they're here with me now. They are loved, that we are connected. There's this incredible connection that occurs with these animals that come in. And so it became like this, kind of like divine experience of like sadness for their pain, but also like this incredible beauty and relationship that starts evolving until you only see who they are. And that's all that matters, is that they're doing well. It changed me. Like it crushed me. But it still does. But at the same time, I know it's like, it's so worth it to be in the mix of something so special. And I'm not like a big rescue, but I still had, I had her until she died. She had a great life. I let her have her opinion, and we had a great relationship. It's, I don't know, there's something rich, very rich about it, even though it starts from a really, terrible experience.
Obviously, Michelle found she had a heart for rescue. And like international soccer competition, she found that even though there were extreme challenges, there were also great rewards. But what keeps her going during the rough times?
Yeah, well, follow my heart is the first thing, because that's what I did with soccer. My dad said, Michelle, you'll there's nothing there for you in soccer. And I was like, but I love it. I love it. That's what's there for me. So I just followed my heart. And that's same with my horses, same with this rescue. It was like, I was like, with Zoe, that first horse, I was like, I love horses, but this is something unexpected. And I it's bringing something out in me that I didn't know was there. And I love it. Like, this is something I want to experience more of, and something I can do well to give back. And so that's follow your heart. And then the other part was what Christine Lilly, my teammate, you just have to try. Like, with soccer, like a lot of players, a lot athletes, I mean, even off the field and in regular life, a lot of the hurdle is just trying. Like, because there's so many reasons to not try. Like, you might embarrass yourself, you might fail, you don't know where to start. Like, but just take the first step, just try. And you're not going to be good at it right away, but trying and doing your best is the standard. That's how I became a world champion, and that's how I followed my, and that's how I followed my heart to do the horse rescue. And that's how I still do it every day. I just try my best. And to me, that's like, those two things are the biggest, I guess, the biggest ways of doing what I want and contributing and doing it for so long.
That's such good advice for us all in every area of our life, and to reach each of our goals and dreams. But in addition to the mottos, follow your heart and just try, Michelle had two more components that she felt was critical to success.
The other one is I am just like kind of this, I am relentless. I am relentless. Like, once I get my mind made up, I just will not give up. And, hence the 30 surgeries on my knee, which, okay, maybe I should have given up. After 7 or 8, but that relentlessness is it's, and some, my dad said I was born stubborn, so maybe I had it all along, but it definitely can be built on. So I, just try and do your best, be relentless. And if you're doing what you love, that is the ultimate fuel.
Follow your heart, just try, be relentless, and do what you love. I can see how those things could be a recipe for success for any of us. They certainly propelled Michelle to the top of her chosen sport. And speaking of that, soccer was such a big part of her life for so long, I wondered if she missed it.
Oh, boy. I want to say no, but I think, no, that's a good question. I'm not sure if I miss that. What I miss most is that bond of team, the team of like being part of this group of people. I have a certain job I have to do, and they have their jobs to do. And when I'm doing my job to the best of my ability and they are doing the same, and my goal is also to, you know, make them perform to their best. There's this, it's just the being a part of that and at the highest level, and with so many layers attached, that is a feeling I have not been able to replicate off the field. Yeah, I miss that. I think too, like when I have a small herd now, but I used to have a, you know, like 7 horses, a bigger herd. And when I would watch them together out in the pasture, they were kind of like, I always was envious of that because that's how they live, you know, that's their ideal environment. So I'm always envious of that and, you know, wish I was a horse in a herd because of that feeling I know they must have. Because I felt it with my U.S. national teams.
Another question some of you had for Michelle was if she ever saw herself competing with horses. It's a good question since so many of her years were spent in one competition after the other.
Oh man, I'm not going to say no to that. I started doing some competition stuff like with obstacles, and I was really intrigued about doing stuff just bareback and the kind of the natural freeform at Liberty stuff. There's something about that when a horse chooses to do something with me. But I haven't been able to kind of get into that, but I would love that. I had this Mustang, his name was Phoenix. I rescued him. The BLM got him as a baby him and his mama. And then he did like the Mustang challenge and then he ended up in a bad place. And then I rescued him in Georgia. That guy, he was so cool. And so I kind of was dreaming of doing some things like competition stuff with him. But then I lost him last year. He had a gut twist and I lost him suddenly. So right now I don't even have a horse I can ride. All my horses are, they're kind of like me. They're all beat up right now and unrideable.
You know, my yard glider is my favorite tool. It makes hauling just about anything around the farm easier. Hay, feed, brush, anything. If you haven't seen one of these, Yard Glider is a modern-day stone boat. It loads without lifting, it hauls more, and it dumps faster than a cart. I got my Yard Glider a few months ago, and since then, it has helped me move more stuff than I could ever have imagined. I can pull it with the truck or a small riding lawnmower, and I use it every single day. Seriously, every farm and every property should have one. Yard Gliders are made in America, and you can get yours at yardglider.com. Use code HRN and save 10% when you order right now. Michelle has hinted at various aspects of her rescue, but I was curious to learn more. It seemed that any animal who ended up there was very lucky, and after hearing her talk so passionately about it, I know I was right.
So I had the 5 and the 5 horses, and I lost Phoenix, so now I'm down to 4 horses, and I also had a herd of pygmy goats I rescued, and a pig. And chickens I rescued from Tractor Supply. They bring in the day old chicks,
yeah.
And some of them are sick, and then they just kind of put them in the back. I happened to see I was like, hey, what are you guys doing with those? And they're like, they're sick. And I said, I'll take them home. So I started doing that and I fell in love with chickens, which was a total non thing because I got attacked by a rooster as a kid and I was like, No, hell no to chickens and roosters because I was afraid of them, but I had to overcome my fear. So that's how I did that with the chickens and I fell in love with them. But the horse rescue stuff for me, it was helping a horse, one horse at a time, and then connecting community into saving more horses and animals. And I, over the years, realized that there's only so much, you know, I can do as one person. I can do more by talking about it through my platform or recruiting the soccer community and other athletes to be more involved in rescue. And also I get a lot of calls and emails from people looking to rehome their horse or about a horse in trouble, horse or animal in trouble. And so I connect those people with other rescues wherever they are calling me from. So I've become kind of an advocate connector person. And then recently, I met Katie Dixon. She was in Bend, Oregon, and she had, she's a horse trainer and she's beautiful with her horses. And so I was going to go apprentice with her, and her organization was called Renegade Equine. And she moved up to Vermont. But now I'm on her board of her rescue so that's kind of, that's kind of a long answer, but so I'm kind of like taking care of my herd and as a sanctuary for these bonded ones. And then I help connect those animals in need to rescues nearby or fosters. And then I'm also using my platform to create more awareness.
Michelle Akers is certainly driven, passionate, caring, and in her own words, relentless about the welfare of horses. But what about her? Horses give us all something very, very special. But for Michelle, what specifically do horses give her?
You know, to me, like seeing my horses is kind of similar to like seeing a hawk or an eagle flying above. It's like there's a freedom about them. There is a fragility, but also a power there, and there's connectedness, but also an independence about them. And being with them is a privilege because they're so different. They're not, you know, like my dogs, they just are like, oh my God, I'm so happy to see you all the time. Like I don't have to really work. I don't have to work at all. They just love me and are excited to see me. But my horses, it's everything matters. And I love that it's a challenge, but I love that the quality of that connection with them.
My last question for Michelle was open-ended. I asked what was the single most important thing we hadn't discussed that she felt it important for us to know. Her thoughts are definitely something we all need to hear.
Across the board, rescues, it is such freaking hard work. And it's not just, you know, physical labor, the physical work of it. It's, which, you know, a lot of people who are into horses, we enjoy that. It's a lot of work, like just emotionally, and it takes a toll. And it's a huge personal investment just in every way, but it takes a toll. You know, financially, it's very tough. It's very, very tough. That's that, you know, COVID that hurt my rescue so much. And then just the ups and downs of life, it limits what the work, you know, who I can save and who I can help. So just being aware that, you know, anybody who does rescue, they always need $10, you know, like the donation, because gosh, I get some letters from kids and there's like a dollar in there. And that just makes my day. Like it like lifts me up. And which I need, like, it's such a blessing for that, that lift. So just the kind words, some people send me in emails, it lifts me up and it enables me to go another day, in some of the hardest circumstances sometimes. So just keeping that in mind that these horses, they cost a ton of money. They cost a ton of money. I know I'm talking about money a lot, but it's hard. It takes a lot of money to say, to keep a horse healthy. And just, so just keeping that in mind, if you're a horse lover and you want to donate, and I'm not just talking about my rescue, I'm talking about, you know, all these rescues across the country. These people do a lot more than me. Every kind word and every dollar makes such a difference. So, just consider, and thank you for considering that, you know, it means a lot.
I really hope you take the time to check out Michelle and her rescue on Instagram at MA Horse Rescue or at her website at michelleakers.org. That's michelleakers.org. Well, that's it for this episode. And you know by now, we couldn't do this show without the help of a number of people and businesses. Special thanks, of course, go to Michelle Akers. And also to Mike Mead, Hands on Gloves, Yard Glider, Jen Hebert, Glenn Hebert, listeners Libby, Flossie, and Pat, and of course, the Horse Radio Network, now part of the Equine Network family. As for me, look for me at lisawysocki.com. That's LISAWYSOCKY.com. And if you're so inclined, you can find my latest book, Lead Ropes Don't Lead Horses, everywhere books are sold. Many thanks to you for listening, and tune in next time to learn about another celebrity who loves horses.